Okay, great. So we'd like to welcome everybody this evening to Karen Scholl's teleseminar. We appreciate all the questions that have been emailed to us, and we're getting to those as soon as we can. My name is Melinda Garish, and I'm your host this evening, and I'm from Shirley, Indiana, which is east of Indianapolis, about 30 miles. So we've got some exciting topics to talk about tonight. We're going to be talking about a horse that won't move forward. We're going to talk about one that's bolting, a nippy horse, one that won't stand still in the trailer, and jigging for home. So we'll go ahead and get started here, Karen. The first one is from Bobby, and it says, "Hi, Karen. I met you in Oregon when you gave some clinics at Eagle Bear Ranch. I was so excited to be able to meet with you, and I love watching you work with your horses. I learned a lot from those clinics. I'm emailing because I have a question to ask. I have ran into a horse that totally shuts down and won't move when trying to do any groundwork with her. Well, she either explodes by rearing and bucking, then just dies on you and stands there as you use the string on her withers all you want, and she won't move. If you can't make a horse move its feet, then you can't go any further. I know she's closing down, but how do you get them back into the game?"
You know, it's really always so amazing to me how horses develop patterns of behavior. And, you know, so in my kind of imagination, because I'm picturing it, you know, while the scenario is being described there, and so often some of the things we don't realize that we're not doing, and it kind of varies. So, you know, we're kind of doing some analysis here. But one of the things that I see that's most common is we don't realize that we're not presenting the direction with the feel on the lead rope first, clearly enough for the horse. So it's sometimes what our tendency to do is, because we think, okay, we have to make physical contact because I talk about the mama's bite, but the priority is giving the direction first. So often what people do, and I see it over and over and over, and I did it myself, you know, and you know, my horse and I got confused and lost, you know, kind of in the same scenario years and years ago. And what I found works so nicely is if I completely relax my body, because we don't realize it sometimes. We go out there and we go, okay, here we go. And, you know, we get kind of on the muscle first. And the horse goes, uh-oh, here it comes, you know, and it creates a defensiveness. We don't realize that we pick up our molecules sometimes when we go, okay, I'm going to, you know, fix you. It's not a battle of wills. And, you know, I draw a lot of comparisons between horses and children. When you come out to a child and say, okay, Johnny, you know, and you're expecting to fight, guess what you're going to get? So the first thing that's really, really very important, it seems very subtle and or even insignificant, but it's very important from the horse's point of view, and especially mares. This is one of the things, I heard you say her, mares oftentimes get very insulted or incensed if we don't go through the stages of being polite. So how a horse perceives you as being polite, if you go out there and say, okay, mare, you know, here we go, because of things that have happened up to this point, I mean, you can see why that would occur sometimes, but we don't always realize that we're doing that. You know, even in parenting, we don't realize we're doing that. We say, well, Johnny fights me every time I want him to brush his teeth. So, you know, what am I supposed to do? Well, you know, let's remove the horse scenario and let's look at Johnny doesn't want to brush his teeth. If we walk out there and go, hey, Johnny, listen, it's time to go to bed on the next commercial. I know you like what you're watching. On the next commercial, you go and you see if you can brush your teeth and get back here before the show comes on. I'll bet you can't do it. See, you know, and a five-year-old kid would go, yeah, I bet I can. Now, you've kind of changed the scenario. You've taken the fight out of it. You've interrupted the pattern behavior. So if you can kind of draw from that and go out there and the horse goes, uh-oh, you know, because a horse has developed this kind of pattern of behavior, they get very good at recognizing your intent. And so your pattern of behavior is going to be reflected in theirs. So oftentimes when people present a challenge or a problem to me, what ends up happening is we start examining, okay, what are we doing and what could we do differently? So sometimes I go out there with horses, like I'm flying up to Canada this weekend, and I'll have demonstration horses who I've never met, never seen, and oftentimes I'll get horses that are just like this, and they'll come out there, and I'll have them on a lead rope and just be standing there. And those horses get big, and they get worried, and they go, come on, come on, I spot the best, and I go, I believe you. And the horse goes, come on, I know what to do, and I go, I believe you, and I'll stand there. And it's really amazing because the audience is like, well, why aren't you doing something about that? He's acting like a brat, or she's doing this. And I go, because that horse is, what am I going to do? You know, and my mom always said, takes two to make a fight. Now I'm almost 50. I understand what it means. When a horse gets on the fight, the only thing, you can get into a fight with them. Believe me, I've done it. It doesn't work. So sometimes it's just stand there and just watch the horse until the horse just relaxes, because the horse says, I know what you're going to do. And you just go, no, I'm not going to do that. Okay. So that's the beginning of interrupting the pattern. All right. So now that the horse is relaxed and standing, we're going, well, I guess we're just going to stand here and gaze lovingly into each other's eyes. And I'll bet the longest I stood there, I did this once, Melinda, there at your house when the gal had a hard time catching the horse in the stall. And you remember when I left after lunch, I didn't come out after lunch. She asked for help. She was in tears, couldn't catch her horse in the stall. I said, well, let's go. And boy, I'll tell you, this mare knew what was coming, and she knew how to, you know, maneuver. And I just stood in the doorway of the stall. And when she looked at me, I walked out of the door of the stall. And then mare looked at me and said, well, what are you doing? I said, nothing. See? And then I walked back in, and she went, oh, you're not going to catch me, not going to. I said, I'm not trying to catch you. And when she stopped and looked at me, I walked out of the stall. And, I mean, it took a whole 10 minutes, but this gal had been fighting this horse for I don't know how long with this problem. And after a little bit, that horse just stood there and said, you know, I went up and pet her, and I walked out of the stall. See, it's interrupting the pattern. So play with that a little bit, because the mare is reading you like a book, and that's where some of the pattern's coming from. So interrupt it early on is a nice way to start. Now, the next stage is once she starts kind of going, well, I don't know what you're going to do, just say, hey, you know what? I think I'd like to just pick up that lead rope and run my hand down that lead rope. This is one of the things I see that it's a difficult muscle memory for people to develop, is to put a real feel on that lead rope. There's something that I call, and Bobby, I'm sure I talked about this when I was doing the clinic up there in Oregon, and it's kind of a pet peeve of mine because I see people even teach this, but I call it a soggy rope syndrome. You know, horses follow a feel, but if we don't give them a feel to follow, sometimes we go through the stages of reinforcing what we're asking them, but we never clearly gave them the direction in the first place. So from a horse's point of view, if you don't offer them a real feel and a direction on that lead rope, and then we go to the next stage, which is, you know, wave of warning and a little nip, little mama's bite, the horse says, well, you didn't ask me to do anything, but now you're yelling at me. And that's where horses will tend to go backwards. They'll push in the pressure by going up. They get mad, especially mares. They get mad because they just go, you're not asking me to do anything, okay? So it's really important to just take a moment, and if you're using have something in your hand, take your hand and draw that rope back as far as you can, then with the okay sign running down that rope and hold it there and close your fingers, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then drop the tail of that rope. If the rope is too short, you've got too much contact, you can always soften your hand, your leading hand, and allow that rope to slip through your hand a little bit. But the majority of the time, I'll bet 90% of the time, people don't take up enough slack. And so what we do is we have this big old drape between our hand and the horse, and then we just kind of, you know, point it out to the side a little bit. It makes very little contact on the halter. And then we go to using our rhythmic pressure, but we haven't used the steady pressure or the touching pressure to give the horse the direction, okay? Here's another piece. If the horse is rearing up, going backwards, things like that, add one more step into this with her. So you're going to run your hand down, and again, it's on the DVD so you can see it exactly, but if you can imagine it, run your hand down that rope as far as you can. Draw that tail back like a bow and arrow, back way back by your ear if you need to. Okay, take two draws if you need to. If your lead rope was too long and you don't make enough contact, draw it back again. But there should be enough contact that you almost feel like it's too short and you might want to slip some rope. Then, instead of directing the horse either left or right, instead, don't even stick up your stick or anything, hold that, close all four fingers and hold that so you politely applied the pressure to the horse and walk backwards. If you walk backwards, that gives the horse the direction, I'm going to differentiate between speed and direction. So speed, going from a halt to a walk, is an increase in speed, okay? Forget about trotting in a circle for a minute. Let's just break it down into ingredients. So if you put a heel on there and start walking backwards, it opens up the space between you and the horse, and it actually helps the horse feel a little more confident coming toward you, coming forward, okay? Because you can even let the rope slide a little bit if you need to. Don't let the pressure go. Don't let it go slack or anything. But just comb that rope and invite that horse to just follow the heel forward first. Now, when she comes forward, that's different. That's different than what she was doing a minute ago. So just let her come in and find the release and just stand there a minute. Hold your arms and just look at her. And I'll bet you if you wait a minute, she'll kind of blink her eyes and kind of lick her lips and drop her head and go, oh, I feel pressure on the halter, and if I follow the feel, I get back into my bubble of comfort. Okay? Do that a few times, and then as she's coming forward, when she starts getting that pattern, then as she's coming forward, just pick that line up and direct it out to either the left or the right, whichever direction you're choosing to go. Wave a little bit of pressure just in front of the drive line, which is at the shoulder, just kind of towards the neck, just a little bit of pressure. Don't even go to a bite yet. You're just asking for little bits, little ingredients of the bigger picture that you want, okay? So, and then when she goes, when she drifts, open your hand and let her pull that rope through your hand and find her comfort again, okay? So what happened here is that it's easy to see a path, and it's easy to go out there and think we're doing it, and then the horse has a behavior, and we go, you know, what's going wrong? Every time there's, you know, a behavior in a horse, if you can look back with self-examination, objective self-examination, sometimes that's hard. And don't involve a spouse in that. If you come to find the partners, you know, the husband or wife, I could go, hey, can you watch me and see what I'm doing wrong? Usually it's like, leave me alone, I'll figure this out. But if you have somebody that you can say, hey, you know, this is what it's supposed to look like, you know, give me an extra set of eyes to see what I'm doing, okay? But usually, I'm picturing it how it's working, usually those are the missing ingredients. And then you just build on that. And every time she goes a little bit further, a little bit further, pretty soon she learns my comfort is out on the circle. Now, you got to keep your end of the deal, too. When she tries, you need to back off the pressure. And that's a very difficult thing for humans to do because we're predators by nature. We get out there, especially if we're kind of driven, A-type personality, you know, come on, let's go, you're just being difficult. She's not being difficult. What she's saying in her behavior is saying, you're not being clear to me, and I would like more clarity. So once you break it down, just like you would a child, if they're having trouble in math or something, you break it down to the very simplest thing, help them build their confidence, you know, and then it can just accelerate. But it's in these kind of behaviors, it's kind of gone into, you know, a power struggle. She gets on the fight, and then it's all over. And honestly, I really admire, Bobby, you for, you know, submitting this question, because a lot of times what people do is they just go, well, my horse can't do this, and they just go, well, we won't do that, and they just go, avoid that. So I really admire you, Bobby, for submitting such a great question, because it's a really common challenge for people because of those two things. We don't realize that we're getting out there, and when we're seeing that kind of behavior, the horse gets on the fight, and we get on the fight. And you know what Confucius says, you know, two fights don't make a right. So you know, just take a minute. Just take a minute and then just really observe. Here's the cool thing. When it gets to where the horse isn't thinking anymore, they've gotten on the side or you're not thinking, whatever, just stop. Just stop. Go away. Watch the video again. Look at it again. Every time I watch a video, I pick up something else. Okay? So my videos, I kind of teased during one of my demonstrations that my videos have this secret embedded processor where every time you watch it, you hear something different. It's the same video, but, you know, something different plays every time. But usually it's because you have a different need or a different situation, so you tend to hear the information or see the technique a little bit differently. So, you know, break it down to the simplest denominator, rebuild her confidence by rebuilding yours. And remember, when she's trying, don't ask for more. You can always build on success. But sometimes what we do is we get a little bit of success and we go, okay, now you've figured it out and now you're going to, you know, do it at a trot or a canter or whatever it is. And the horse, she'll unravel on you pretty quick. She'll go back to old patterns of behavior. So, again, it's just what I taught during the clinic, but you're at a different stage where it's becoming even more important in this situation because she's developed a pattern that's really kind of big and scary, you know, and all that kind of thing. But just all I would do if I had her lead rope in my hands is I would go back to just these simplest things. And people watch it, and I mean, you know, it might take you, you know, 30 minutes or an hour or whatever. It might take me, you know, less time, you know. But just take the time it takes for her. Just kind of gauge it for her. But so many times when I go back to these simplest things, just offer that horse the comfort every chance I get. Let her know if you try, there's comfort in this deal. And pretty soon she will figure it out. Mares figure out comfort really fast. And she'll go, man, my comfort's out here on the circle. And it may just be at a walk. You know, if she walks a quarter circle and stops and looks at you, man, you ought to just stand there and look lovingly into each other's eyes and you drop your energy like you're never going to do it again. That's another reason why horses start balking at just simple tasks like circling. Is they get out there on the circle and they stop and then we get after them and we don't go through those same consistency of steps each time. So when I'm doing a demo and a horse like this has trouble and that horse takes a step or two, I'll just stop. That horse stops and looks at me. I'll just stand there with just all the comfort in the world and all the time in the world, and I'll look at that horse and go, thank you. Thank you. Because two steps going in the direction I had in mind is a heck of a lot better than running backwards and rearing up and flipping over on the ground. You see, that's huge progress. Okay. Then I just start again. Run my hand down the line. Be very specific. I might back up. Ask for that horse to follow field forward, direct it out. And I'll tell you what, it doesn't take two or three times. That horse goes, you know what? I think I like being out on this circle. I might as well go out on this circle because that's where my happy place is. So kind of think about those things. And then as you and your horse build confidence, you can pick it up into a trot, pick it up in a canter. But that's because your muscle memory is going to be so much better that you can feel the release of that pressure. You can feel when you're taking the comfort away and when you're giving it back, even when things start moving faster. But just start it a walk. Make your goal today, you know, one walk, you know, full circle, you know, and we're done. You know, we're done for the day. Go, you know, have a nice lemonade or something and celebrate. You see, it doesn't have to be everything all in one day. So take your time, build your confidence, and just rebuild her trust in what it is that you're asking her to do. And let me know how it goes, okay?
Okay. And Karen, Bobby has another question that along with this horse that she's having trouble with. And she says, when the horse is on the trail, he seems like the perfect horse. And then all of a sudden she'll bolt for no reason that they can detect. She walks fairly slow, and I think she's in another world, and then comes out of it and scares herself. She says when her friend first bought this horse, she seemed like the perfect horse. She tied in the trailer, isn't real excitable, seems like a dream horse. And then she recently found out not long ago that she did rear with her friend's niece when the niece had her in a round pen and tried riding her and pushing her when her friend first got her. She's really gentle, calm horse, and then all of a sudden not. And so her question is, you know, what do you know what's causing the real quietness? And then suddenly she'll bolt and scare herself. Any suggestions there?
Well, horses startle. I mean, they're prey animals, and so they're going to startle. Now, the couple of things that kind of come to mind, I heard, and again, I'm playing detective here, I heard the word just sitting there, she's so quiet, she zones out, okay? Riding is an activity. If a horse zones out, then that means I'm not riding anymore, it means I'm sitting, okay? Sitting on a horse would allow a horse to zone out and just, okay, ignore you because you're not asking anything. When I ride a horse, my body's in motion with that horse. I'm picking up a rein. I'm doing something. I'm, you know, moving a leg over every step on that trail, you know, regardless if I'm in an arena or anywhere. Every step is my step, okay? That's an awareness I have. And if I feel a horse zoning out or looking at the other horses or wishing it was going home or, you know, whatever it is, fill in the blank, I do something else. I go, hey, I want to hold a conversation with a horse. Does that make sense? If a horse is being allowed to zone out, you know, it's just like you. If you're kind of sitting around doing nothing, you know, sitting in a business meeting and you're zoning out, you know, and somebody comes in and slams the door, you'll jump too. So they can zone out, you know. So what I would do is become more active in my riding. And think of it as holding a conversation. It's not getting after them or anything like that. It's, you know, hey, can I pick your foot up and put it over there? Hey, can I have you take a step sideways over three or four steps and go into the other track if it's, a, you know, two tracks on a trail or something like that? Can I have you go over and step over, you know, around this rock or step, you know, through between the trees or around the log? Yeah. Do something to have that horse, you know, maintain interest, okay? And it's nice to have a horse that you could put grandma on and go to sleep and go off out there. But, you know, to me, I think one of the most dangerous labels a horse can get is a bomb-proof horse, because honestly, there's no such thing. If a horse feels threatened or startled or anything like that, I'll tell you what, they will tuck their tail and get out of there. So to me, I want to be able to develop my abilities to hold a conversation with a horse so that that horse knows that I'm their partner. And so when a horse goes, ooh, something scared me, we're in a conversation. Number one, they may not even notice those kind of things. Those, you know, it seems like, you know, I'm getting the impression that it's just kind of nothing happens and all of a sudden the horse, you know, just bolts out of there. The other piece of it, though, is it sounds like relationship-wise, this particular mare needs somebody with really strong leadership skills. And so when the horse reared with the person who was, and this was the other word that kind of jumped out at me, pushing her in a round pen, I'll tell you what, if you put me in a round pen and pushed me around, I'll tell you what, I better not come back as a horse, especially your horse, because I'd be like her. I go, you know, hey, who, you know, and see, that's the thing where some horses just are not tolerant of people's idea that this is somehow because I'm the human and you're the horse that you should do my bidding and I'm going to push you around and, you know, get after you and things like that. There's so much of that in the industry, and it seems to be one extreme kind of to the other. You know, I see kind of general patterns where some people have developed that get after them, and it may not be all the time. It may just be when, who knows, she doesn't want to do something or whatever, but it doesn't work, and it doesn't need to be that way. And then I see other people who never really ask their horse to do very much at all. You know, so it's not one or the other. It's kind of like your kids. You have high expectations, but you appreciate the littlest effort towards those expectations, you see. So it's those two kinds of things. I'm not saying to back off and sing kumbaya and that kind of thing. I'm going to ask the horse to progress towards my goal, but I'm going to do it in such a way that I want to invite that horse to surrender to me. And this goes back to one of the things I try to emphasize in all my clinics, and you know, I've written lots about it, the difference between surrender and submit. If somebody approaches a horse and says, you will submit to me, I don't agree with that. And a lot of horses put up with it, but a mare like this sounds like she won't. But if I present myself in a way that that horse would surrender their emotion to me. If that horse would surrender, that's not a loss, that's a choice. And I've earned that with a horse. So that's the difference between being dominant and being assertive. Somebody who's dominant demands submission, while leadership or assertiveness invites surrender. And those are two very different things. That's why I choose not to use the word dominance with horses, because that's the things that I'm hearing about this mare, that's where it comes across. I don't agree with that. I have found that actually works against me. I used to use that terminology. I was taught that. I used it. I taught it to other people. And, you know, as I've developed, I've realized no horse is going, oh, wow, I really love my human. They're so dominant. Dominance isn't the quality they're looking for. Leadership is a very different quality. So if you can kind of think of it in broader pictures like that, develop the skills and make sure anybody handling your horse has those skills as well. This, to me, is not the type of horse that, you know, you can put anybody on and go off like a bump on a log, you know, down the trail. So, but it doesn't mean that she's not, you know, the type of horse that you couldn't hold a conversation with. To me, these kind of horses are the horses that really appreciate and welcome the conversation from somebody who's, you know, trying to reach them, trying to understand them. And that's again, I'll compliment you, Bobby, for, you know, asking for that yourself. So many times these kind of behaviors, people go, you know, forget it. But go through the things, the riding from the ground and riding from above. That's what I teach in all of my education on the DVDs, in the clinics, at the expo this weekend. I'm going to talk to people about how to hold a conversation with a horse in such a way that that horse can recognize what's being asked of them. They can respect it because they recognize it, and then they can respond to it. But if they can't recognize what's being asked of them, you know, how do we expect them to keep a nice, competent attitude? See? So it always goes back to our skill and ability of being able to hold that kind of conversation with a horse. And it's just, I'd make it very simple. It's not complex at all. It's simple. How would another horse influence that horse? Okay? So if you look at horse-to-horse interactions, if you put that mare out with a herd of horses, and, you know, she may have herd mates already, if you watch how they interact with her, you know, then try to emulate that, you know, just adjusting. Obviously, your horses don't have lead ropes and riding them and, you know, things like that, but that same kind of principle applies.
Okay. Well, Bobby, we thank you for submitting both of those questions, and good luck there, and we'd love to hear back from you how that's going. So, Karen, are you ready to move on to another question then?
Sure.
Okay. This one is from Sandy, and it says, hi, Karen. I have started helping my friend. I had the full set of videos from Karen, and I've begun to use some of your information on her horse, which is getting rather quickly. Right now, we only get to work together once a week. The challenge is that her 15-year-old gelding, as I am finding, is basically rude and nippy anywhere near his head. He has absolutely no respect for his handlers, most likely due to lack of leadership on her part for so long. He has made it a habit to try to nip my friend off and on for a while now, and this was one of the things her last trainer was working on with her. That person recommended elbowing him each time he moves in. I feel that this is hard to accomplish, sometimes due to my or her position or the angle we might be in relation to the horse when it happens. The horse seems to blow right over it anyway, basically coming in again, and nothing up happens. And now that I've started to help her, is there a Karen Scholl way to handle this issue? Well, I guess she should have met Latigo about 4 years ago.
Melinda, would you like to take this question?
Because when I got him, he was that.
Oh, boy. Well, and I just have to tell a story, Melinda. I hope you don't mind, but when Melinda and I met, her horse Latigo was a demo horse at one of the expos. And so kind of at the last minute, Melinda started having second thoughts about, you know, having this person, you know, take her horse and this kind of thing. And so she called me on the – what's that?
I was going to say, I only had him for a couple weeks, and I'm like, oh,
Yep.
She'll just ruin it.
Had him for a couple of weeks, and the issue was is that, you know, he was the same horse. It sounds like the same horse, doesn't it? Nippy and,
it does.
You know, yeah. Sounds like the same horse, and nothing was working, and it was kind of, you know. So I get this call from this very nice lady, Melinda, and she said, you know, my horse is okay, you know, maybe there was another horse you could use, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I said, well, you know, tell me about your horse. And, you know, Melinda was very nice, and she said, well, you know, he's kind of nippy, but he's so much better. I think he's okay. He's going to be okay. You know, he's so much better now. And I said, well, let me ask you. I said, when's the last time he tried to nip you? And she said, this morning. Okay.
Asking for help.
Yeah, but rather than having the horse in the demo, she's like, yeah, I don't know, you know, because Melinda didn't know me. You know, she didn't know me at all, and she had some impressions and, you know, had some doubts. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. We should be, you know, very conscientious about who we put our horses, you know, into their hands. And, you know, so I didn't mind that at all. And I said, well, listen, I said, you know, just why don't you bring them out and, you know, let's go through some stages here. And so during the demonstration, one of the things I explained was, you know, this horse, what male horses have a tendency to do, these are generalizations. And I'm going to not talk about stallions so much because that's a whole different thing. And don't necessarily say what I'm talking about with geldings here is going to work with stallions. The stallions have a different agenda. And if you try what I'm describing for a gelding with a stallion, you may be really, really sorry. People that own stallions or handle stallions need to have a very high level of skill with horses, because stallions will just look at you and go, I'm sorry, but you need to go now. Bye-bye, and you're done. You won't even see it coming. So when I talk about leadership skills and developing these leadership things, I'm going to talk about geldings right here. Okay, do not apply this here. Because he'll go, oh, I tried to use that as a stallion, and he stumped me on the head. So it's different. They are different creatures. Testosterone is a very powerful hormone that dramatically affects behavior. Okay. With that said, if you take two geldings and you see them out in the field or next to each other in pens or on the other side of fence from each other, they love to play what's called the gelding game. Okay, the gelding game, you already know what it is just by me saying that. They love to nip and play with each other. They're mm-hmm. like two boys. Anybody who's raised two boys knows that they fight and poke and bit and butt, you know, all day long until somebody gets hurt. And then you separate them and they're back, you know, 2 minutes later doing it again. So geldings have that same kind of instinct to have that physical contact. And they love, I have two geldings that they love to go, they could be together, but they'd go to separate sides of the fence so they could play that game through the fence. That was even more fun. And they'd sit out there it looked like hours sometimes just playing the game. So here's what happens. When a horse nips at you, about all you can do at that point is rub your arm or whatever the body part they bit and go, ow, okay?
Good job.
Because if you get after him right there, and it's a waste of time. The damage is already done. What happens is when a horse gets mouthy and nippy, if you take a swing at him with an elbow or hand or, you know, a manure fork handle, whatever it is, you take a swing at him, what you've done in horse language is you have accepted the invitation to play the gelding game. And so when you accept that invitation, they go, oh boy, now it's my turn again. Okay. So, and it can go on for absolutely ever, because that's what they do, all right? So here's what you do. It's a very simple thing with mouthiness. Backing cures biting, okay? Backing cures biting. Now, when you back the horse up, it is important that you keep your feet in the same place. What I do is I see people and a horse will, you know, go to nip them or something, and they'll take a shank or they'll take the lead rope and they'll jerk it straight down. Sorry, I'm getting somebody talking in the background again. So I see what people do is, I don't know where this technique got invented from, but I've never seen it actually work. But they get after a horse by taking a shank or lead rope or something and they bang on straight down and they back that horse up. You back up, you back up, you back up. Well, when the whole little thing gets done, the discipline, okay, the disciplinary action, you're still standing right there next to the mouth of that horse. And the horse goes, well, that wasn't that bad. I'm going to wait till my opportunity comes again, do you see? So it's not enough to have the horse go, I don't want to put my mouth on that human, okay? So here's the other thing. When a horse puts its mouth on another horse, if you think about the hierarchy of the herd, what's that saying? It's saying that that horse believes in its own mind that it is in a lead position over the other individual. So when people think it's cute, when a little foal has its mouth on them and they're, you know, nibbling on their shirt and they're, you know, doing all these things, I'll tell you what, that gives me the heebie-jeebies because those great big teeth that can snap a carrot in half are right behind the lip. Okay? And I'll tell you what, I had a horse put its teeth on a very a body part that I did not want to lose. And I'll tell you what, the teeth are really right behind the lips. I'm pretty sure they are right there. So to me, I don't believe that there's any benefit to allowing a horse, to letting a horse put his mouth on me. You wouldn't let a person do that, you know, put their mouth all over you. I mean, it's not appropriate. It's not appropriate in human relations. It's not appropriate in horse relations. But here's what, you know, children, dogs, and horses, it's how they learn. That's the process of socialization to say, you put your mouth on me, it's not appropriate, and it's my responsibility to give you that information. So here's a very simple way to do this. Keep your feet in one place. Don't do any shanking or any of that other stuff. And use the end of a lead rope or the teaching stick, okay? And you're going to have a posture, pressure, wave of warning, and you're going to deliver, you know, something with contact to the horse, something that the horse doesn't want to feel again. Have that horse learn that their comfort is standing beyond, way beyond, arm's length to you. I use a rope halter with a 12-foot lead. See if you can teach that horse that his comfort is a full 10 feet away. You've got 2 feet of lead rope to hold on to. 10 feet between your hand on the lead rope and the clip on that halter. And stay there. Stay there. See? But because horses are pattern animals, but what we tend to do is we get into their space. I call this the hugging position. It's so prevalent. You know, it has a name in my teaching. It's the hugging position. We somehow think that we have to be within touching distance of the horse when we're on the ground. I don't agree with that. It shouldn't be that you avoid that, you know, that I should be able to go up and touch the horse. I can touch the horse, but he cannot just come up and touch me. When a horse comes up, and almost every horse I handle, I would say, you know, 1 in 50, don't do this, but every horse I handle comes up, puts his big old moose nose all over me and goes, hey, sister, how are you? And I'm like, get off of me. And the horse says, don't you want to hug me? I'm like, well, no, actually, I don't know you that well. See, that's what a lead horse would do. A lead mare wouldn't let some strange horse just come up and rub all over her, you see? And so people think, oh, that's mean. Well, to me, to let a horse mooch all over you and then get after him for putting his teeth on you is mean. Because you told him it's okay. And then something hurts, and then you get after him. To me, that's mean to a horse. Because he's going, but we always do this. I put my lips on you. You used to giggle. You know, oh, that made that laugh, you know. You see? And then you get after him for something you said was okay. So what I do is I have a clarity of who's in the leadership position from the instant I am in the presence of that horse. When I walk away, that horse is your horse. And this is the thing to understand. The trainer can't go in and fix this problem on the horse for you. That horse within, you know, 12 seconds is going to be back mooching all over the top of you. So
I'll give you an example. There was a woman in a clinic, and her horse was mooching all over her at the end of the day. Every day of the clinic, she had horse snot all over her. And she'd look at me, and I had a crisp white shirt on, and, you know, and she said, you know, well, if you had my horse, you wouldn't look like that. And I said, okay. I said, let's switch. Guess what happened? Within 30 seconds, my horse was rubbing all over her, and her horse never got its nose on me at all, not even on my sleeve. And you know, we stood there, you know, it was during the clinic and the lecture part of it. I said, here, just hold my horse, and I'll hold yours. And all of a sudden, she went, oh, my gosh, it's me. And she said, well, why is your horse doing it? I said, because you didn't tell him otherwise, do you see? So it's the horse is picking up on this. And so her whole thing of be close to me and I love you. And we do love these horses. We do love these horses. And there's nothing wrong with hugging your horse or kissing your horse. You know, I ask people who've been yelled at for kissing your horse. Well, there's nothing wrong with kissing your horse as long as that's not all you do. Okay? So back that horse, teach that horse that his comfort is at least 10 feet away from you, and do this for like 2 weeks. 2 weeks. Now, when you need to pick up his feet or put a saddle or anything, you be the one to close that 10 feet of distance. Gather up your lead rope. Don't put a big old drape in the line. Just walk up to him. You know, gather up your lead rope as you go in, so you're still have an effective position on that. But anytime he even takes a step, you know, if you draw a line in the sand and say, don't cross this line, and he takes one little baby step and you go, stop, okay? If you don't take a second and have him go back across that line, he will take it inch by inch. You give a horse an inch and they'll take a mile, okay? These are all patterns of behavior. They're the nature of the horse. So you find it in the nature of human, the nature in dogs. So it's just, again, clarify your expectations. You can't expect somebody else to do that for you. And if I walked up and had that horse in my hands, how long would it take before that horse recognized my position of leadership? And here's the cool thing, and people don't always believe this, but I walk up, I have that horse, I might, you know, during a demo, I might squeal like a mare and kick out behind and swish my tail if I had one, you know, just like a mare would. And these horses that are, they'll just back up. They won't do it again. They just stand back there and they lower their head and they relax. And they relax and they fall in love with me in an instant. Wherever I go, their eyes are on me. They want to be with me, but not too close. They go, okay, man, I'm with her. She kicked me. I love her. Horses love that because it's a survival mechanism, okay? So you're actually giving the horse more confidence and more happiness in his life because you're not just the mushy little pushover toy thing, you know, that we think we need to be, you know, for the horse to like us. So it's kind of opposites with horses. We go out there and we feed them and we love them and we give them treats and all this stuff and they bite us. And then I walk out there with no treats, no nothing, and I go, oh, you're a handsome horse. The horse goes, I love you, man. And when I hand the lead rope back to the horse owner, I'll tell you what, it's probably 50% of the time when I do these things, apply these techniques to these horses, you know, I exude that kind of leadership where I'm not some kind of a pushover, but I'm not a big mean jelly bean. And I hand the lead rope back to the person, and when I walk away, that horse, even though the lead rope is in that person's owner's hand, that horse tries to go with me. Now, what does that tell you? Okay. And I'm not looking at the horse going, come on, Paco. You know, I just turn around and walk, and I just notice out of the corner of my eye that horse is trying to come with me. And I'll see horse owners go, where are you going? And the horse is like, I understand her. You see? So those are some things to think about, but to me, there's no reason, there's no benefit to having a horse put their body part on me for, you know, for any reason. I don't see any benefit, only, you know, downside. So, you know, try that little thing. And the other reason the horse can't bite you when you back them, number one, you're moving up in the leadership ladder, and number two, their lips aren't on top of you. Okay? Think about that as well. But kind of a, you know, long answer for kind of a short question, but I really want you to have that depth understanding for why the horse is doing it, what we're doing when we swat at him. And I'll tell you what, when I see people that hear the rule of the horse bites you, you have 10 seconds to, you know, think his life is going to end. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that. It's how we exude leadership of the horse, that teaches the horse, you know, what their what's acceptable behavior and what's unacceptable behavior with a clarity, and then let it go.
Well, the good news, Stacey, is you can share that with your friend. It does work. This, you learn this technique, and that behavior just goes away. It's just,
and how long did it take, Melinda?
As soon as I got it, it was gone.
It was gone, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah,
it's not like a 30-day training program, but it is a way of being. And,
yeah.
See, that's where, you know, if somebody else got your horse, Melinda, and they had the huggy, huggy, mushy, mushy, you know, deal, I'll tell you what, he'd go right back to fighting again.
He has, and I've seen that. So,
yeah.
They're smart. But, and so that was kind of the light bulb moment that, okay, it wasn't him, it was about me, what I needed to do there to fix that, because I didn't want that behavior. So,
and he was like, oh, boy, this one likes to play the gelding game. I love that.
And then I was like, oh, gosh, Mike, she does know what she's talking about.
And we've been friends ever since.
We have. Oh, goodness. So, all right, on that note, we'll move on to another question here. This one is from Judy. And Judy says she has a 10-hand Shetland that she drives, and he is incredible with his cart. He just goes and goes like an ever-ready bunny, and I love driving this pony. She says, I can load him in a trailer, no problem. But once on, he rears and flips out and spews manure all over the place. It does not matter if I trailer him loose or tied up. I have to keep the top doors closed because he'll climb out once. He has climbed out once. So when I trailer him, I clamp him down so he cannot move. He gets him there safely, and once he is out, he's fine. He does get squished in there because I have to pull the divider over so I can sit his cart in, but I doubt that this is the problem because I've also tried giving him a lot of room and the whole trailer to himself. There are a lot of windows, drop-downs, one, etc. It's a bright and airy trailer. He also won't stay tied up to the trailer for any length of time. He rears and climbs up on the fender. Last week, a friend told me to put him in a trailer, which is very large and was completely empty. You could hear him doing multiple gymnastics in there, and when I couldn't stand it, I took him out, and then the trailer was covered with manure again. Once out and washed down, he was happy and dries like dynamite. What can I do to help him and myself? And this is from Judy.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like he used to trailer fine. Is that right? Did I hear that in there, or has the trailering always been
there? I think he loads in the trailer, no problem. But once he's in there, I think he's had this behavior.
Okay. Well, what I would do is a couple of things. Number one, realize it doesn't hurt a horse to be in a trailer for long periods of time. You know, and sometimes what we do, we don't realize that we're developing. We're kind of contributing to some of these patterns of behavior. So say if a horse is pawing, 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 and we, you know, get to where we're going to go, and the horse is pawing back there, so in our mind we think, oh, they're suffering. Well, you know, what's happening? Nothing. You know, they're just in the trailer. But if they're pawing and we go out and we let them out and, you know, give them their lunch, the horse goes, oh, I get it. I paw, and then humans run around back here and get me out of here. And then I go to my happy place, either with the other horses or whatever, just get out. So one of the things to think about is, you know, when you get to a place, and I talk about this on my trail loading DVD, when you get to a place, don't let the horses out right away. Go inside. I mean, don't let them be cooking or freezing out there, you know, in an oven. You know, just let them sit. But so many times what we do is we get to a place and we scurry around back there and, you know, very quickly get them out of the trailer. I'll tell you what, my horses that, you know, they haul with me all over the country. You know, do you think they paw in the trailer or scurry around? Now Deb was an interesting one, you know, when I first got him in Florida. And he was really funny because everywhere we stopped, he'd look around like, you know, we didn't even get off the property. And he had put his foot through the
payback and torn that all up because he started going, oh, I'm going to start putting my big old feet all over in here and who knows what. And I just looked back there. I said, dude, you're going to be hungry. And off we went. He was like, note to self, don't tear up the thing that holds the hay up to where I can eat it. People will ask me the question, should a horse, you know, be loose in the trailer or should he be tied? They should be able to do both. I like to tie horses. They need to be able to be tied because I have had a horse trailer door fall off a horse trailer on an interstate and not know it. Okay? Doors fall off. They are, you know, they are things that break. All right? So to me, it is important to tie a horse into a trailer. So that being said, it goes back to this horse is not good about being tied. So here's an ideal thing. Without getting your trailer wrecked, or, you know, use somebody you don't like very much and use their trailer. But what I would do, and it doesn't have to be a trailer, you could tie the horse. It's important to teach your horse to stand tied for periods of time. And you can tie a horse, take him out, exercise him, come back, you know, tie him again. Bring him water there, okay? Bring him their food there and have him stand tied. You know, on the farms, you know, my dad's era, when they farmed and had horses, those horses lived in tie stalls. They were tied all winter, okay? So it's not harmful to have a horse tied as long as the horse is being, you know, physically used. When they're in a stall, you could put a horse, I've seen people put horses in, you know, 12-by-12 stalls. You know, what's the difference between being in that kind of a stall than, you know, being tied? Not that much. See? So, you know, the horse still is not in motion and moving and walking around wherever it wants to go. But somehow being tied, what's happened with the pony here is the pony says, well, I'm going to catch a walleye fit and somebody's going to come over and untie me and get me out of this. So there's things that some of the facilities I worked out of that I really like, and they'll have a swivel on the top and be a post, have a nice, comfortable, sandy area around it. They call them patience posts. And when I start colts, I'll take colts like 3 in the morning, and I'll have two tied to these nice, big, safe, you know, patience posts. And while I have the other horse, you know, people say, well, why do you bring 3 out? Why don't you just bring 1 out at a time? I said, because I'm doing a favor for the other two. Why not have them tied for half a day? It doesn't hurt them. It helps them. Because you may find yourself in a situation like we are with our pony here where this pony needs to be able to stand tied to be safe, to keep him from hurting himself in a trailer or on the side of a trailer or, you know, who knows what. If he's crawling up the side of the trailer, they can, you know, he's already crawled out of the back of the trailer. I would teach him to tie first, okay? There's a new DVD. I don't know if he pulls back. I don't hear that he's pulling back, but, you know, tie the same approach that I would take with a pullback horse is what I would do with him. So there's a DVD on my website. You'll be able to see that it's pulling back. It's specific to that particular problem that people have with horses. And you could go through that very same process with him to say, you know, hey, you're going to stand there. And pretty soon, I'll tell you what, you know, horses and husbands, I wouldn't say they're lazy. They're very energy conserving, especially ponies. And it really, it might take him a while, but pretty soon he's going to go, why am I doing this? Okay. The hardest thing about taking the approach of leaving a horse alone while they're pitching a fit is us. Because we just look out there and we're just sure that, you know, we hate to see them, you know, behaving that way and feeling that way. But what we don't realize we're doing when we go out and rescue their emotions, we reinforce those emotions, okay? Now, when the horse stands tied outside for long periods of time, when he's comfortable and confident doing that, then you can move into a trailer. And what I would do with a trailer, I like the idea of going back to the big open trailer, okay, and turn him in there loose, and I'd have him, you know, spend the day, make sure he's in a cool spot, he's not going to, you know, but, I mean, what's the difference between that and a stall? You know, just leave him loose in there, bring water to him, I'd hand water him in there, I wouldn't leave it, for him. I would hand water him. And you could do it every half hour if you want. But usually horses drink, you know, when it's really hot, they'll drink maybe twice a day deeply, okay? But you can offer him sips of water, you know, all he wants. And make that trailer, you know, a happy place. So pretty soon that horse goes, oh, this is where I get fed. This is where I get water. You know, there was a gal that taught one of my college courses years ago, and then she had yearlings that were racing quarter horse bred. They were going to go to the track one day, which meant they were going to need to be hauled quite a bit. And she fed all those yearlings in just these old trailers that were blocked up really nice. And to get in, they were little trailers. They weren't big stock trailers. They were little ones where these horses, for their meals, would load up, you know, and they had to step up and they had to back out. They couldn't turn around in there. They had to back out. And they were the nicest little loading horses. And they held that, you know, their whole life. I wish every young horse had that person, you know, doing that for them before sending them out into the big bad world. They never have these problems. But being tied is seems like the main thing with this horse. And when he learns to just stand tied, then you're just going to teach him to stand tied in different places. But go into a nice big open stock trailer where he can't get his foot through anything. He can't get hung up in a manger. You know, can't get a foot. I've just seen horrible things. There was a horse that wouldn't stand tied at one of the clinics, and the gal was helping me load all my gear into the horse, and he was just jumping in place. He was doing the Levant and Capriole. He was fabulous. And I said, gosh, you know, you didn't tell me he had this challenge. She goes, oh, I never tie him. And I said, really? I said, why not? She goes, well, I don't need to. I just bring him out, and I tie him up just long as we saddle on, and off we go, because that's what he does. Well, guess what? He needed to stand tied. And so, you know, it took a while, but he finally just stood there and said, why am I spending so much energy? Like, I don't know. And then go on time when he's quiet. See? So, and it was unfortunate because he got to where he stands tied, and this was just at the very end of the clinic. So, you know, we didn't have time to work on this. We could have worked on this over the course of 3 days. I'd known about it. So he stood, and he was pretty quiet, and he, by the way, he was had problems with the trailer too, took him to the trailer, did a trail loading, got to where he loaded in, everything was quiet, everything, he was good, he was thinking, we were using all the things, you know, she and he had learned in the clinic, you know, and he stepped in there, and I said, you know, it's important that he stands tied wherever you put him, because when you put him in this trailer, this is where he'll get hurt if he doesn't have that behavior, and I moved on to another trail loading. I think I had three of them that day. And while I was loading that horse, they came running around the corner screaming, Karen, he's got his foot through the window and, you know, busted out the plastic and had a jagged edge. And luckily, because there was a clip on that lead rope, she was able to reach through there and undo that barrel clip. So one of the reasons they used the barrel clip, you know, was really valuable that day. She was able to just turn that barrel clip because he was hung up so bad with his foot through there that if she wouldn't have been able to do that, I don't know. I don't think it would have been stitches. I think it would have been much more severe, like cutting tendons and arteries and things like that. So, boy, I'll tell you what, all these things, you know, what people hear me talk about, and then they see it, and they go, oh, my gosh, you're not kidding. And I go, I'm not making this up. It's important. It's really important. So, think about that too. You know, make being tied that horse's happy place. In fact, you can even do this. Go out to, if he's kept in a stall, don't do it where other horses can reach him or anything like that. Like if he's out in a pasture with other horses, don't tie him to the fence because then he's defenseless. I don't know, there's probably a pun in there somewhere, but he's defenseless against the other horses picking on him. I saw somebody do that one time. Somebody left a horse tied to a fence in the pasture with other horses, and these horses on the other side of the fence were reaching across and biting them. And I, you know, knocked on the door, and I said, hey, you know, I untied the horse. So I handed them the halter. I said, you know, here, you know, somebody must have just forgot or something, like tied the horse to pick the feet or something. And boy, did I get in trouble. He said, that horse was tied up for a reason. He was learning the lesson. I was letting the horse. They were letting the horse bite that horse. And here I am. What do I know? You know, like, oh, somebody must have forgot. People gone in the house and left him tied out there. But so people do, you know, really crazy things. But you can go out to a stall, take an area that other horses can't reach him, and go out, put his halter on, put a lead,
you know, tie them to where horses should be tied, something nice and stout and safe, and give him his breakfast, his lunch, his dinner, water in there. Water in there. Make standing tied his heavenly place. And believe me, ponies especially are highly motivated by happy things like food and water and resting and doing nothing. It really won't take him very long. If you did that for 2 weeks straight, every day, just go out there with your halter and the feed bucket, his regular feed, just tie him up, you know, hang the feed bucket, use the tail of the rope, you know, to tie the feed bucket, and, you know, give him, and actually ponies shouldn't get more than probably a handful of grain. He sounds like he's a very athletic pony that you use him quite a bit. I want to compliment you on that, because a lot of times Shetland ponies in particular can get really overweight really fast, so it sounds like you use him quite a bit. And, you know, if you can resolve this problem, it just sounds like, you know, you really have a happy, happy time. You're doing great with the cart and doing, he loves what he's doing. It's just, he doesn't love, you know, not doing that. So, you know, give him something else to think about. Change his mind about standing tied. Okay. I'd love him for a demo horse on a video, you know, won't stand tied.
Yeah.
But we'll do, and we'll watch the change. Ponies, they get it really fast. But, you know, if you think about it, when the animal is, you know, pitching a fit, it's just like a kid throwing a fit. You know, how many times has it taken, you know, Stevie a candy bar in a grocery store before you have a problem? And pretty soon you got to, you know, into a horse, untying him is like giving him a candy bar. You know, it may not seem like that, you know, but it really is. But teaching horses to stand tight is a really important thing. I can't emphasize it enough. You know, the other gal avoided it. You can't avoid it because you're, you know, hauling in a trailer. You're trying to find those answers. So thanks for submitting that. That's a really great question.
When you talked about the candy bar, I'll share with you real quick. Lisa wanted a candy bar, which is my granddaughter. And I said, no, Karen, if I give you one of these, it's going to start a bad habit. And she goes, that Karen.
Now you said that. The other piece of that is, if you remember, Melinda, is when she's not asking for a candy bar, you sneak one, you know, to the grocer and kind of say, shh, don't let her see this. And you sneak one in your groceries and you surprise her with that.
And surprise
her,
okay.
Yeah, so it's not like the children never get any treats. It's when the kids aren't, you know, pitching a fit to stop at the ice cream store that you go, hey, kids, what do you think about stopping at the ice cream store? Okay?
Yeah. Well, it was just a lot of fun to say it. Was it Grandma's behavior that was not letting her have that?
Yeah, don't blame it on me. God, throw me under the bus with this 6-year-old.
The 5-year-old.
Oh, 5-year-old. Yeah,
yeah.
Lost my number one fan under 5.
No, she's still a fan. She's still watching the TV recorded shows and all that. Still a fan. Always will be. So, listen, Karen, it's already after 9 o'clock. I can't believe time's gone so fast.
Oh,
we still have one more question. And, Deanne, we're going to go ahead and get that one next month in July. We'll start off with that one being the first question. So we apologize for not getting that today. So thank you, everybody, for submitting your questions. And we're getting to those questions as soon as we can. Karen, do you have anything last minute you want to add?
No, I'll tell you what, I've spent this last week here with my apprentice, Stephanie Lindsley. She's graduated high school, going into college. She'll be going to CSU in the double major vet program and also psychology. And it was really interesting to talk about, you know, how the two of those really complement each other. And she's traveling up to Canada with me to the Outdoor Canadian Expo this weekend. I'm speaking there and doing demonstrations with her. She'll be assisting me up there. And then the following week, I come back and I turn around and go to Connecticut. I'm doing a clinic in Connecticut the following weekend, and then Colorado after that. So if you look online, I'm just doing this is the month for the, you know, few clinics that I'm doing this year. So if you can get to them, if you can't get to them, please get the education on the DVDs. We have a new series that you should see here, the Fix It Today series. That's a problem-solving series. There's six different titles that can really help you out. Because, you know, I can describe it. That's why it takes so long to answer some of these questions, because I'm trying to describe it so you can picture it. But when you watch a DVD, you can see it. And you can see the change in the words. You can see what my hands are doing. And I really encourage people to get the knowledge, because there's no reason to have these horses and not have the operating instructions. It's like me with my computer and not knowing, you know, how to run it. You know, we need help sometimes. So, yeah.
And those
really
new DVDs are on your website now,
okay.
Your new ones?
Yeah, I believe they are. I need to check with Mr. Website.
Okay.
But they should be. If you don't see it, Mark gave me a little, you know, it should be shortly, but if you don't see it, just send an email saying I'm looking for the problem-solving series.
Okay, great. Well, Karen, thanks so much for taking your time out this evening to be with us. We want to thank everybody else for joining us, and everybody have a great summer, and we'll catch you in July.
Thank you, Melinda.
Thanks, everyone. You're welcome. Good night. Good night, everybody.
Good night.